Hello, and welcome to Cubicle Confidential, weekly advice for the working stiff. I'm Chris DeSantis, and let me introduce my co-host, actually my surprise co-host, because my regular co-host, Mary Abajay, will not be here this week or next week, and I'll talk about that in a moment, but I don't want to leave my co-host hanging. Let me introduce my co-host, Tim McClure. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for inviting me into the cubicle.
Yeah, you're most welcome. I will give a little background on Tim in a moment, but I should explain why Mary is not here. December for Mary, as you remember, actually, Mary runs a very successful consulting firm, CareerStone. And CareerStone, it has to wrap up the year, which is a particularly busy time, but they also have to ramp up the next year, which is another busy time, which made Mary in a bit of a clutch situation. So rather than run reruns again, as we had done in the past, I thought I'd take a stab at interviewing one of my good friends who has a background in something I'm not particularly comfortable with in the sense that I don't know as much about it as I'd like to. Let me talk a little bit about Tim. I've got a bio here and I'm going to embarrass him to some degree, but Tim McClure is a strategic advisor to entrepreneurs, investors, CEOs, and leadership teams. The founder of Blue Oak LLC, Tim has spent the last three decades, although he does not look it, conducting market research, developing strategy, leading business model innovation, and optimizing organizational performance. He takes a holistic approach to helping businesses set and achieve goals, foster collaboration, and create cross-functional alignment. Whoa. Now, a little bit about his degrees, because he's got a good one. Tim earned his MBA with the concentrations in entrepreneurship and strategic management from the University of Chicago. Yeah, way to go, Booth School of Business. And his undergraduate degree in finance from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He resides not far from me in a quiet corner of Lincoln Park with his lovely wife, Suzanne, who's a wonderful person and a psychotherapist, and their two children who I've seen since birth, Jonah and Francis. So anyway, Tim, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Chris. That was a wonderful introduction. You can go ahead and read the page two that I wrote.
You should know. Tim and I go way back. Tim and I met, I think, probably, I'd say 25 years ago or so. It's close to that, at least, right? At the time, you...
Feels like 50.
Well, at the time, I think we were both met through Arthur Anderson.
Yeah, that's
if I recall properly. And then Tim went on to run his own business. Actually, it was might have been more than... it would have been about 25 years ago. Tim has now been running his own business, very successful business, in a category of work that I'm really not that familiar with, even though I find it interesting. And so what we're going to do here today in actually part one and part two, rather than answer call in questions or questions that we receive by email, what we'll be doing this time is I'll just be asking Tim to give me sort of the down and dirty of strategy. So I hope that's okay. Tim, are you up for that? What else should I know about you, Tim? I know that I'm hogging the mic, as it were.
No, you covered it all. It's great to be with you. I'm an avid listener. You and Mary do a great job. I had a bit of a cold last week. So on this podcast, you're getting smooth jazz, Tim.
It's a little very bit smooth. It's a little. It's two pack a day, Tim. It's two pack a day.
I'm trying to quit.
Oh my gosh. So anyway, this is all around strategy. Now, don't get me wrong. I've read about strategy. I find it, as I said, it's an interesting thing. In fact, once sometime back, wasn't a few years ago, Tim, we did one or two gigs together. I thought.
For
a law firm.
We've collaborated a couple of times. You're a tough act to follow, but happy to be included. Okay.
No, Tim was very vital to correcting their sort of lack of strategic vision and giving them one, which is one of the things we'll talk about. But we hear this word all the time, right? So, you know, color me skeptical around this, but, you know, I hear the strategy all the time in the business world. You know, in your take on this, Tim, since you do it, this is your bread and butter. What's it mean? What are we talking about when you say this?
Yeah, what a great place to start. You know, I say to clients, I say to my kids too, words mean things, right? So we should be very conscious of what we're saying and what we're hearing. So maybe to make a point here, Chris, you're a fan of comedy. You like watching Saturday Night Live.
Most certainly, yes.
Do you remember, it would have been over 20 years now, Will Ferrell was doing an impression of President George W. Bush?
Well, I remember him doing the impression, a particular episode of this.
Well, so the one I'm going to refer to is, it was actually Candidate Bush. So he was Governor Bush at the time. And they were, as they do, doing a political send up. And it was a debate. Al Gore was debating GW. And at the end of the debate, the moderator said, just to sum up your candidacy for the American people in one word, you know, why should you be president of the United States? And Will Ferrell, as GW said, strategery. Strategery, right? So that's not a word. It's kind of a word, but it doesn't mean anything. It's low stakes, right? And we laugh, right? And I say that to make the point that a lot of words don't mean anything until we all agree what we're talking about here. So that's a yes. Great place to start the conversation about strategy.
Yeah. Because, so what is your take on that?
Yeah,
you got to educate people all the time, right? You're always educating.
Absolutely. You don't want to make assumptions. So we start with the beginning. So, you know, we hear that word a lot. It feels high stakes. And so really what it means to me is a set of decisions about your business or your organization. It's really that simple. We're talking about the decisions we've made about the business. Now, when we zoom out from that, we get all different sizes and shapes and flavors of strategy, different ways of doing it, different frameworks, and et cetera. But at the core, it's a set of decisions. And the formula that I like to use is to organize it around three really basic questions, right? Who are you as a business? Where are you going? And how are you going to get there? So through a series of interactions, we answer those questions. And what we have at the end of that is what I call strategy.
Well, I love that. You've simplified it, but it sounds simple, but I don't imagine it is simple, because you're not just talking to one person. You have to convince an entire organization to go in the direction that you are suggesting. And by the way, you are an outsider. So how does that play?
Well, so as an outsider, you've got you're sort of deputized to ask the uncomfortable question. You can challenge assumptions. You can come in. You don't have a stake in the game and say, why is that? Or you know, Tom, do you agree with Bob? And these sorts of things. And you can sort of suss out where the camps are in a way that maybe folks that are inside the organization don't necessarily do that. And there's really a method to the madness, and we can walk through the mechanics, but you've got to get the right group of people involved. But ultimately, you're not done until just about everybody that works at the place has been informed about this strategy, if not laid hands on it and have some ownership in it.
Well, when you say everybody, because in my mind's eye, and of course, this has been my experience, is I don't see myself thinking strategy, meaning I'm a small business. A small business. So I don't say, oh, my strategy is, although I do have a sense of where I should go and the direction I should go, you know, sort of the marketing of who I am. But I never called that strategy. I've always thought this was a concept reserved for large organizations. And you're saying you have to talk to everyone at the large organization to get this done?
Well,
sounds cumbersome.
Not necessarily. So I'm glad you brought up large organizations. Sometimes this is a term that we associate with the Fortune 500. But
right.
Leaders at public companies are required to present a long-term plan, their strategic vision to their board on a regular basis. But this applies to middle market companies, family-owned businesses, startups, right? No matter who you are, it's a good practice for organizations of any size, of any type, manufacturing, service, distribution. It is really non-denominational. It's good practice regardless of, again, size or shape.
Well, we talk about this strategy, though, but I guess my thought is businesses are there to sell something. And so in that sense, isn't that just self-evident? So where does strategy come in if every business just starts with somebody wants to buy something? Does every business start with a strategy first, or do they start with it's like a chicken and the egg. What do you start with? What you have to sell, or the strategy of going to market with what you could be selling to another?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So we have two camps here. We have the 0 to 1 and we have the 1 to N. And when I say 0 to 1, what I'm talking about here is startups. So if you're thinking about starting a business, maybe you have a day job out in the garage, you've invented some whiz-bang machine. Is this really a product? Could there be a business around this product? These are sort of the fundamental. Am I going to make a leap? Am I going to invest my life savings in making this happen? So those are kind of rare cases. For most businesses, you're on a trajectory, and either you like where you're headed or you don't like where you're headed. If you like where you're headed, you've got to take some steps to preserve that, to bolster it, to make sure that you can continue on that path. And if you don't like where you're headed, you've got to make some decisions to steer out of the ditch. So the difference between strategy and I think what you're talking about, there's certainly inertia is a powerful thing in life and in business. And there are all kinds of businesses who are where they are because they rode a wave and things came at them and they responded to what somebody wanted.
Right.
And the next thing you know, we've got a success story and we've got a big customer and maybe we should open a second plant and all this kind of thing happens. When we talk about strategy, what we're really talking about is intention, right? Mm. So if you're a leader and you have aspirations, you have a vision for where you want to go, then not get you there. You know that old saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. That's really what we're talking about here is if you've got something you're trying to make happen, you can't just take what comes at you. You're going to have to be intentional, deliberate, putting resources behind X and not Y. You're going to have to make trade-offs.
Now, that's interesting. You said something that I think I hadn't thought about, but are you saying that vision precedes strategy or that strategy strategy seems almost operational in its sort of machinations, whereas vision is more ethereal, more of like, you know what I'm saying? What we could be, aspirational.
Yeah. We're in the realm of, you know, consulting buzzwords. So we hear a lot of things about the mission statement and the vision statement and the core values and all this sort of flowery poetry that's on a printed out on a sign and it's hung on the wall and nobody looks at it.
Right.
So, you know, the way I think about strategy is a lot more holistically, and it's about answering those three questions. Who are we? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? So who are we? That's our mission. That's our core purpose. What business are we in? And by extension, what business are we not in? Are we selling products and services? Are we just selling products? Are we selling washing machines? Are we selling appliances? Are we global? Or are we local? Are we expanding? Are we contracting? You know, there's no one right answer, but it's sort of, who are we, right? Where are we going? That's where the vision comes in. So if I understand that, you know, I know what business I'm in, I know what I do well, I know why I win out in the marketplace, then the vision is not a statement, it's not poetry, it's a chart of numbers that says 3 or 4 years from now, this is the company I'm trying to build. And you put very specific objectives in there. Maybe it's growing revenue. Maybe it's increasing profitability. Maybe it's both of those things. Maybe I need to diversify my product offering. Maybe that's the last thing I want to do. I need to weed the garden and focus on the core. I need to be a better employer and retain more of my workforce. Whatever it is, we can put numbers around all that stuff. We can pick a point 3 years out, and that's the vision. It's not poetry. It's these are very objective. We hit it or we didn't kind of metrics at some point in the future.
So, I see. So you're saying these are all initiatives that you would have. Is there a limit to the number of initiatives you would take on if you're creating a vision or actually a strategy?
Well, absolutely. And the initiatives are really in the how we're going to get there, right? So you're hitting on all this right stuff, maybe not precisely in the right order, but you're right in the ballpark there. So if we've answered who we are, we know what we do. If we've answered where we want to go, then the how we're going to get there kind of falls out of that in a real natural way. If you're with a group of friends and you're planning a bachelor party, maybe you've decided a location and we have to fly there and we need hotel rooms, right? If you're planning a destination wedding, it's a totally different thing. But if you know who's involved, if you know what you're trying, where you're trying to go, then the ways to make that happen, certainly the opportunity set shrinks. There are always choices to make, but it's not infinite. It's now narrowed down into how do we want to make this happen?
I see. I thought that was interesting too. This notion of the direction we want to take, and actually you alluded to this, the idea of how we frame ourselves. So for instance, you use the example of the washing machines. We sell washing machines. Do we? Or do we sell cleanliness?
Right.
You see, now if we sell cleanliness, it's a different framing of what business we're in than washing machines.
Yeah. So there's a wonderful, I think it's, maybe you'll think it's wonderful, we'll have to find out. An exercise I like to take clients through, and it's about the obvious business versus the cloaked business. And so the sort of a classic example of this is Starbucks, although they've kind of evolved into the second and third phases of growth, so it's not as clean. But in the beginning, the obvious business for Starbucks is what? It's retail coffee shops, right?
Yes.
Okay, but they have a cloaked business, the business they're really in. Do you have a guess of what that business is?
The third space?
Yes. All right. Yes. The third place. The third place between home and work or home and school, right?
Yes.
And so by recognizing that's what they were doing, it had direct implications for the footprint of their stores. The fact that they were early on with Wi-Fi availability, that there were lots of places to sit and work or read, that they were tolerant of lingering in a way a lot of other retail establishments would be, drink your coffee and move on. I need to get somebody else in here. So at least in the first major wave of growth, they recognized that's really the business we're in, is this third place business. We also happen to sell coffee and now smooth jazz.
Which is interesting as well, because you're saying strategy has to be reevaluated periodically, and then you recreate yourselves, because eventually you meet the initiatives, right? It's an ever-changing process, right?
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's some foundational stuff, the kind of who are we, that might be evergreen or might be something that changes slightly or infrequently. The vision is a kind of a 3-year set of goals, 5-year set of goals. Once you hit that point in time, you put a yardstick out 3 or 5 more years, you set new goals. And then the work to get done, that's constant, right? So we're constantly mm-hmm. getting things done and moving to the next thing. And, you know, you had asked, can you take on too many things? That's one of the mm-hmm. biggest pitfalls that companies have. If you focus on a handful of really good things, there's no perfect list, but if you focus on a handful of things, you get those things done and replace them with another handful of things and get those things mm-hmm. done, you're building execution muscle. And strategy is execution. If you're not doing the things you set out to do, then it's just an exercise. It doesn't make any difference in the business.
And isn't there a bit of a, because I'm thinking this from the perspective, let's say I work at a Starbucks, and I don't, but let's say I did, and I'm a barista, although, let's imagine.
You're stretching the imagination here, Chris.
I know. Let's just say I am. And I know I'm pushing coffee. That's what I'm thinking. I'm pushing coffee. And then I'm hearing corporate saying, oh no, you're a third place. You are a place where everyone sort of can be sequestered and feel safe and home. You see what I'm saying? And my thought is, do people know what's going on here? My point is, isn't it sometimes difficult to translate what the intention of the vision is to the reality of the line?
It absolutely can be. The more distinct or the more direct that line is, the better off you are. Mm-hmm. And you know, make no mistake, right? These examples from Harvard Business Review or the latest pickup from Amazon. In hindsight, it's easy to sort of derive these lessons from Starbucks mm-hmm. or from Southwest Airlines. But at the time, right. I don't know that it was quite as intentional. But still, it can be instructive that if you know, you've got to kind of zero in on what you believe your core purpose to be, and don't stray from that as you're trying to accomplish these other things.
Okay, I'm buying it. I mean, I'm you sold me. I get the idea of this. I think there has it has veracity. It has validity. And so in that sense, let's say we're at a party and I'm a CEO. I've been promoted from barista.
From barista to CEO. Howard Schultz on the line.
I'm a very good barista. And so I'm the executive director of, I've opened up my own. It's Star-like Bucks, you know, sort of my own version of
McDowell's.
Actually, doesn't McDonald's, aren't they coming out with a new one? McCoaster or something like that?
McCosmics.
Yeah. It sounded so Jetsons to me. McCosmics. You know, where they have that, hi, I'm Rosie, I'll be your waitress. So, but anyway, I've had enough to drink and you know, I'm kind of, you know, I've had a few drinks. I'm kind of, okay, I don't feel so bad about this. And I'll talk to you. So what am I in for? You know, if we decide to go with you, is this an easy thing, a hard thing? Am I going to like you? Am I going to hate this? What's going on?
I got it. So we're at a party and you're drunk.
I'm at a party.
You're drunk enough to tolerate my elevator speech. Exactly. I got it. Okay.
Because nobody else is talking to me here, and I figure this guy might, you know, I could hook him because he might make money from me. So give me a pitch.
Got it. So this is it. Is it painful? The answer is it can be, particularly the first time. So this is a lot like going to the dentist. Right. If you're a man of a certain age like I am, and as you may be, if you've never been to the dentist and you go for the first time, this is not going to be a fun time. this is not going to be a one and done. It's going to be painful. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be hard. And you know, you're going to be back in that chair again and again and again. Right. Strategies sort of like that. If you and your team don't engage in these conversations, if you haven't gone down this path before, the first time it can be a little clunky, but you'll get through it. And the next time you do it, it'll be much easier, right? So if you develop a good habit of brushing and flossing and rinsing, that next checkup, it is one and done. You get a pat on the back from the dentist and you go home. So the first time it can be, you know, there's a learning curve and you've got to make that work within the culture of the people you're dealing with, right? So you got to figure out what's acceptable here. How much change can these people handle? How do we tee up these conversations? And that's really what it's about, the conversations, and get to a good place where we all understand, agree, and support what we're going to do.
Well, to your point about that, you know, I'm the CEO of this company here, and you know, if I've never done strategy, that appears to my subordinates as something that might be embarrassing to me. So, how do you massage that in a way that doesn't make me look stupid for not having thought of this years before?
Yeah, excellent question. you know, there's some coaching that goes on with something like that, but usually there's a reason. So if I'm talking to somebody, you know, not at a cocktail party as we are in this imaginary scenario, they're usually reaching out for a reason, and it's because something's changing. Either their market share is eroding, or they're getting pressure from an investment group or a board, or, you know, the sands are shifting and there's some uncertainty out there. I typically don't get a call from somebody who thinks, hey, you know, next year is going to be just like this year plus 10%. Why would we change anything? You know, eventually those good things come to an end. So it's this good practice for anybody. But usually there's some inciting incident. There's some reason why they're engaging the conversation. And in initial conversations, if we can land on that, there are lots of ways to frame that up to the organization. And a leader will get credit for, you know, taking the step, making the investment in time, involving his or her people. And it can be a real positive experience for the team.
Well, that's an interesting question as well. When should I engage you? Let's say I'm doing my Starlike star, or my Cosmics is going really well.
Yeah.
Is that the time to engage you, or should I engage you, as you inferred, when I feel pain?
Well, are you available Monday? We could start right away. This is interesting. So maybe I'll answer this question a different way. When we do planning, we're in an interesting cycle with sort of budgeting that all businesses do, right? Where they're requesting capital for projects, they're setting targets for next year and that kind of thing. So if that's already happened and we do the strategic planning, we feel like we're a little bit late because we've already set the budget for next year. And so we've decided to do these things, but they're not built into the budget. And so how do we fund these things? And in that case, I say, no, you're way ahead for next year's budget. This is the way you got to look at it. So we've all agreed that we're going to do this stuff. And now we know what the priorities are, what resources we might need to make this happen. There are less optimal times to do it. Scheduling is always a problem. We have executive teams that are scattered all over the country, sometimes all over the globe. And really, scheduling can be the hardest part of it. We can do the work. We can get good answers here. But if you were, if you're just going through a major system upgrade, or this is your busy season or whatever, we want to avoid times like that. But otherwise, as soon as it's on somebody's mind, what I say is that the sooner we start, the better. There's a whole lot of work that can happen behind the scenes. We have a periodic requirement from an executive team to participate in meetings, but in between meeting one and meeting two, there's all kinds of stuff we can do to move the needle behind the scenes. So our strategy, like we've sort of planted our strategy garden whenever we've started, if we're not bumping up against some milestones, some major trade show or whatever you're getting ready for, then usually we're in pretty good shape.
I see. Well, okay. Let's say now I'm sober. It's Monday. I remember our conversation. I liked it. Now, do I work with just you? Do we just the two of us work? How do you do? Or you said earlier, everyone in the organization has to know about what's going on, but who do you work with to get to know the organization?
Yeah, it's almost, well, certainly whoever the head of the organization is, it's the managing partner, the executive director, the CEO, there's a certain level of interaction and meetings with that person. But when it comes to planning, we want to have a team that's involved. You know, I mentioned before the idea of a startup. I worked with a guy who was a nurse. I think he was a respiratory nurse. He was an avid fisherman. He had developed what he thought was a revolutionary fishing lure, and he wanted to figure out if this was really a product and if that product could be a business. Those meetings were one-on-one because he was bringing the whole company into these meetings.
Right.
He had a day job. That's the exception. Most of
Before we go on, what happened with that?
I'm not a bass fisherman, but apparently it's the hottest thing since sliced bread.
Really? Well, way to go. And by the way, you did some homework in the marketplace on that, is my theory.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every project's different, and different leaders have different strengths, and they have blind spots. And whatever those blind spots are, the sooner we find them and we kind of plug those gaps, the better. Sometimes that's market data. Sometimes it's something else.
May I ask another question as it relates? Because you're going to talk to a lot of senior people. Each of them has probably their own agenda. And there's probably less trust of you at this point. So how do you get them to open up to you and then reveal what they want? You know, what is true and what are they just really just saying in smoke and mirrors? You know what I'm saying? Blowing smoke up your ass.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it comes down to trust, right? Which you've got to earn. So, you know, typical process like this, you're the CEO, right? Mm-hmm. And we decide, hey, we've got to go through some planning. And so we say, okay, how's this going to work? Well, here's what I'm going to do. First, you and I are going to figure out who needs to be on this planning team. Who are the other four or five people that need to be in the room who understand your business, are going to have to lead the charge when it comes time to take action and put this stuff in, you know, into place. Who are those people? Very helpful to meet and interview each of those people one-on-one. Spend an hour, spend 2 hours with them. Get a download. Where are you coming from? What are your perspectives on some of the big decisions that are facing the business? We get back in the room the first time as a team, and it's, here's six things you all agree on. Here's five things where you all have a different opinion. We're going to focus on this list first, and we just focus on the work. So if we're asking good questions, if we're listening and really in getting to a point where people have consensus, which doesn't mean everybody gets their favorite. It means everybody can support the decision. Over time, just by doing the work, that's how we get past those objections. But absolutely, you've got a room full of know-it-alls who are very accomplished in their field. The arms are crossed, and, you know, the heads are kind of cocked, and it's like, who's this guy, and what do you know about my business?
Right, because, and by the way, your point about the room. So, what do you do? You go to a resort, you go to the Ritz over in Orange County, California, for a weekend, and you create this little strategy plan over breakfast and drinks and things like that. Or how does this work? Because you have to meet with everybody.
Yeah, you definitely do. I'm not available to go to the Ritz Monday, but I can meet you there at the end of next week. I get this question a lot. We've got somebody has a retreat plan. We have a retreat plan. We're going to be in Boca in the last 2 days. Can you come down and run our strategy session? And, you know, and under duress, yes, we can make that work, but that is absolutely not ideal. So if you think about trying to cram those people into two full days of meetings, let's just say it's 16 hours where we're doing strategy, people are fried. They're looking at their watch. When's my tea time? Where's dinner tonight? Where's that luau cruise is setting sail from?
Right.
In my experience, it's much, much better to take that 16 hours and do four half-day sessions with a week or two in between. You don't burn people out. You give them soak time to think about what we talked about. Some people are really good in the room. They're on their feet. They know exactly what they think. Not everybody thinks like that. Some people have to sleep on an idea, have to do a little homework, and they come back and they say, yep, I agree. 2 hours later, we're not in the room anymore. So if you space these out over a couple of weeks, you can get a lot of work done in between. You can get a little feel rushed. And we have time to do homework. Sometimes we've got to get some numbers. We've got to confirm some market data. We've got to get with that subject matter expert in the R&D department and say, hey, can we even build this widget that these guys think is going to be the next thing? Whatever it might be. So you've got to space it out. Not over many, many months, but maybe over a month or two is way better than trying to just cram that in and check a box, you know, while everybody's on a glorified vacation.
Well, since we're on the topic, one more question before we wrap up our show this week, because we're going to continue into next week on this, is this question about sooner or later you're going to deliver a product. Now, is it like McKinsey where you just put a binder together and they, you know, here's your nice little binder, here, put on the shelf, here's my invoice, see you later, hope this works. Is that how this works?
Yeah, consultants and their binders. Okay, so two-part answer to your question. First one, in defense of the binder, it's really important to document the work, right? We've made assumptions. Uh-huh. We've worked through options and decisions. We need to sort of write down what we do. And the goal really is to have a very concise, compelling set of pages with words and numbers and pictures that say, this is where we're taking the business. But you're into art, Chris. You're a big fan of art. You're an art collector.
I am. Well, at the lower end here, people. At the lower end.
So maybe there's a painting that I like by the surrealist René Magritte, and it's a picture basically of a pipe. Have you seen this picture ever, this painting?
I know Magritte. I like Magritte. Yes, great. I don't know if I know the pipe, but I might have seen
it. If you Google it, you'll find it, and it's a very lovely rendition of a pipe, and in French, I can't speak French, but underneath it says, this is not a pipe. And the point is, this is an image. It's a representation. It should not be confused with the actual object. The same is
so
true
good, right?
with the strategy. This document is the plan for what we're going to do until we do the things that we've planned. So execution is critical. And if we, again, let's go back to the much maligned binder. The last page in this binder is the dashboard, the action plans, who's accountable for what, to achieve what result by what date, what work do we have to do to make this happen is absolutely critical. That's the bridge from the representation of a strategy to actually making a difference in the company. So, right, the binder is critical. We've got to document what we've done, and we've got to get to that list of work, which doesn't have to live in the binder. It can become a spreadsheet or some online progress management tool, but in some way, shape, or form, we've got to keep track of who's supposed to be doing what and did they do it. So that's part one, is in defense of the binder. But the second part, and this really goes to the heart of your question, and this is just as important as that content, is the conversations this group had to make that content, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that we have a leadership team that discussed opportunities, they shared different points of view, they reached a consensus, that's a huge outcome, right? That combination of common understanding and alignment, that's priceless. So the process this group goes through is as valuable as the output, you know, in that binder, because now we know what we're doing, why we're doing it, we've all been part of the process, we're bought in, and we're on board, and it starts with that group, and then it goes to the next group, and then the next group.
Wow, that's great. And by the way, it's a perfect segue to the end of our show, because next week we'll be talking about this binder in terms of not the binder itself, but the process they use to get to a strategy. This is more the nuts and bolts. Right now, what we've done this past week, we've talked a little overview of what strategy is about, why is it important, what are the components of strategy, and how much do I get worth of my binder. So in that sense, that's fine. But next, we've got to say, what do we do with it? How do we get there? How do we get there? And that, I think this is where Tim's expertise will really shine. But this is, in fact, all the time we have this week for the show. Normally, Mary would end the show. Mary, you're out there somewhere. But Mary would normally say at this point in time, if you enjoyed yourself, if you have any questions in the future, please contact us here at Cubicle Confidential. By the way, if you do have questions about strategy at any point in time, please contact us, and I can certainly get these questions to Tim, and then we can answer them on the air, or we'll have Tim answer them for you on the air. That being the case, I look forward to seeing you next week on Cubicle Confidential. So until then, adieu.